When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There were days of mistakes, laziness, and infighting. And there were days, good days, when by anyone's judgment, they would have to be considered clever.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Underrated. We are the Undercast Company. And as usual, I'm hanging out with Ariel Ortiz.
Hello, how's it going everybody?
And Derek McDuff.
Hey, how's it going?
And I am Alan Torres, and today we're going to be talking about my pick, which is the 2004 film, time travel film, Primer. Directed, edited, written, composed, produced, and starring Shane Carruth, and also starring David Sullivan. And this movie came out, 2004. And it's been one of those, I'm a big time travel guy. I love time travel. I love the concept. And this is probably one of the, I know you guys probably looked into it, but you've probably seen like on Letterboxd, people are like, oh, this is like the most complicated or smartest, quote unquote, time travel film. It's kind of, I think the one big reason I want to do this one is because I loved Ex Machina so much. And I really love how it just kind of doesn't really dumb it down for the audience, and Primer is a prime example of something like that, where it's, you know, I think for, you know, anyone going into it, it's not a film you're gonna get off the first watch. Like, you finish it and you're immediately like, I think I have to watch it or watch a video or look at the charts of timelines to tell you what happened here, what happened here, what happened there. So just a quick little synopsis is Abe and Aaron, the two main characters played by Shane Carruth and David Sullivan, they are kind of like trying to invent a new product, something that kind of works with gravity. Seems like they're kind of doing it out of their garage, something very similar akin to like you hear back in the 80s of people working in the garages for like the Macintosh and computers and stuff like that. So, and as per usual, by accident, they invent a time machine out of the machine, and then hijinks happen. It's a very small budget. It was $7,000.
Yeah, micro budget.
And I am a big fan of little movies that could, just like how I was a big fan of Last Year's Terrifier 2. This movie easily made its like money back by like a bunch. I think the box office was like $500,000. And for a small budget film from the 2000s, I feel like that's a huge success. And yeah, it's honestly the little time travel movie that could. Yeah, it's not as flashy or glamorous as like Back to the Future, but it's still, I feel like it's a really great film. And I'd really want to hear what you guys thought about it. It's been on my mind for a while to cover it, so I'm excited to hear what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big time travel fan too. I love a good time travel movie, and there's nothing that bothers me more about a time travel movie is when it's inconsistent and the rules don't make sense and they just seem like they're making up on the fly. And they're like, don't worry about the rules, it's timey-wimey. That bugs the shit out of me. And this movie, it had such hard sci-fi real rules for time travel, and it felt so consistent, and it just, the universe made sense. And it was just like, okay, we care about this, clearly. We care about the story we're telling here. And it felt like real hard sci-fi, and it feel like the lack of budget, like you mentioned, Alan, it's not like Back to the Future or Avengers where there's like every time they go back in time, there's sparks or something. It's just very, very low key, which I felt like really lent itself so well to that realism. And obviously part of that is it's shot with like 16 millimeter footage. So like it looks very just like minimalist and just like this is just, it looks like almost like a film you'd get shown in science class or something. So that kind of lends itself, or like an old documentary about like them breaking through and making time travel. And that all lent itself really well to that theme of like, yeah, this is hardcore real sci-fi. And I love just the way that they are like, okay, the concept of, yeah, this the time travel, you have to like go back in the device and like actually stay in it that long, and that's how long you've been, and there's all these hard rules, like you can't go past back when it was first turned on, and then the way that the characters utilize that and will start to try and get one over on each other. And I thought this movie did a really good job of, yeah, there is this huge scientific breakthrough that we have, and what are the moral and ethical dilemmas that come along with that? And when you get these two different characters, how are they going to exploit it? And yeah, like you said, this is a movie that does not hold your hand at all, like not even a little. This movie introduces a lot of very complex like rules and things. You have to kind of be like paying attention, and you have to, like, you're like, wait, okay, so he brought back the box and this other box, and they rebuilt it, and that's how he got here first, and that's how we get, and like, you have to really track it. And like you said, like afterwards, like even I had to like okay, like let me look at this graph and see like okay, that makes it, you know, it, and I do really want to watch it again. I have only, and luckily it's only 77 minutes.
Oh yeah, that's one of my favorite parts too. Yeah. Is, you know, I think one of our previous guest stars even mentioned it, that like the shorter kind of 1 hour and 10 minutes to like hour and a half film is kind of disappearing now, which there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. I love a good long movie, but I really love that it gets to the point. This is what this is about. And it does a lot in that short time frame. Mm-hmm.
And you know, another reason why it's so short and why it is, you do have to kind of really pay attention, is there's not really any exposition in this. They're like throwing out kind of, you know, semi-complicated scientific things in this movie and all these concepts that you have to keep up with. And they are not at all like, okay, they're not doing the Chris Nolan thing where it's like, you know, in something like Tenet, where it's like, all right, let me explain. Like, they take somebody who's a smart character, and they're like, there's, okay, you should know how wormholes work, you know, in Interstellar probably, but we got to explain it to the audience somehow, so we'll have a scene where they, like, fold the paper. They're like, all right, the wormhole, if you fold it like this, you can stick the paper through, you know, like they do in Event Horizon and in Interstellar. But there is none of that in this. These are just two scientists talking to each other in scientific jargon, and you gotta pay attention. And the thing is, like, the guy who made this, Shane Carruth, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but he was a math guy. He studied mathematics. He did not have a background in filmmaking, and then he actually like taught himself theoretical physics to like make a realistic good script for this. So I really appreciated all of that. This is one of the best time travel movies I think I've ever seen. I'm kind of obsessed with time travel movies. So yeah, Alan, this really worked for me on a lot of levels, including the kind of micro budget thing. I thought that was interesting. I'll get into that more, but I really wanted to say that using the themes of time travel and, you know, what if we could go back and change this, and what does that mean morally and ethically, and how do these guys abuse it or not abuse it or decide to do different things with it, and how do they kind of screw each other over, and the weird implications that come from that. Like, they see this guy from the future, and it's like, oh, he's following us, and they never find out, like, how that guy got there or anything. And then just, like, I love the moment when he's playing basketball, and he knows he's going to make the shot, so he misses the shot. Like, all the weird, like, just way that it branches out, and just, it just fucks with your brain the more you think about this movie, and I kind of love it.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it, too. I kind of, because in college, the engineering and my mechanical engineering and physical engineering and all those engineers were like in a school right next to the health sciences, biological sciences, where you know, I went to school in. And so I had a lot of interactions with them, and very much like, this is just how engineers think and like talk and speak to each other. It's very much them just wanting to crack a code that's always there, kind
of
thing.
And I will second that, because one of my best friends are a married couple of engineers, and this is, you are exactly right about that, Ariel.
Yeah, and it's just very much like, just so I knew the vibe, I knew those people like from the get-go of this movie. They're very much, yeah, like just always like this is like a side project, them being in like their garage and stuff like that, and they are very much internalized like successes, you could say, in a way of of they don't want other people to know what's going on, because there's always like a possibility of like this could be something big, mm-hmm. and so they keep it to themselves. So I very much got the mentality of both of them, specifically like Aaron. Aaron seemed a lot more for himself and a bit more egotistical than Abe, which I thought like I saw throughout this whole viewing of like Abe very much being the one that kind of like gets manipulated the most in this whole thing. I think that the only time like he kind of does the manipulation is only because he sees that something's going wrong, and so he goes back and does that failsafe. And while yeah, it could be seen, and it is seen by Aaron as being like a betrayal in a way, it is very much like, no, he did that because of any possibility of it going bad. I really did love the science of it. It was a very practical science. Going back to that whole idea of that comes down to the energy put in is energy loss, and like no energy is like, you know, just disappears. All energy like exists at all times. So it made a lot of sense that, of course, the time that it takes for them to travel is literally the time that they have to wait in the cells, you can say, or whatever, the cages, the time
travel. The coffins.
The coffins.
That was my favorite. I like the coffins. It was very morbid.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but it also has consequences, mainly mentality. It's kind of like up in the air. Like I was watching, yeah, because I had to gain some kind of understanding of this movie. Just of like who is where and what time. It was mainly the thing. It's very much up in the air of like whether their hands, the reason why they can't like sign is either a mentality thing. Is that because like the whole time travel thing degrades the mind over time, or if it's because that in that first scene where they're like testing out the machine and they have their hand, they're like feeling the energy coming off of it. They both like put in their hands. Specifically like their writing hands in over top of the energy, so it might be that their hands are out of sync with the rest of their body. That's also, I think it just chalks up to a mentality thing. But I really enjoyed the scientific things to it. Like I said, it was kind of like out of my element a bit, but I afterwards like watched a video, I'm like, oh, okay. And it made me enjoy it a lot more, because it was like, yeah, very well thought out scientifically, very in its essence, very linear of a time travel. It's very straightforward once you get the elements and understand the elements of it. It is pretty much a very straightforward looping kind of thing that you figure out. Like it's not winding trails. No, they're very like structured trails to follow. So, but it was a really awesome twist at the end, because I was very confused at first of like how many specifically Aarons there were, but then watching the explanation, I'm like, oh, okay, there's this is what's going on. And then yeah, it was very much of a trip of the idea of like, we don't actually see the real true beginning of this whole story, because we come in as a viewer essentially when it's already been corrupted in a way. Mm-hmm. So it's very much an awesome idea to have that idea in your mind. We don't actually see this original start of this time travel story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite tropes, you kind of touched upon a little, Ariel, is human hubris, especially fucking around with things you're not supposed to. You know, prime example, Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
I love that so much. I love when, you know, we fuck around with science too much and
we find out. Just,
we find out, exactly. That's one of my favorite things. Ex Machina as well. That's why I like love that film so much too. I just love the idea of just humans like just getting involved with something. And it's great, you know, discovery is wonderful and awesome, but there's also a time where the film, you know, talks about it too, when they're at the gas station, where it's like, should we be fucking around with this? Should we be doing this kind of thing? And it's like, well, I don't believe in destiny, or I don't believe that this is, I absolutely love that. And like you said, Derek, there's no exposition at all. It's just, I just love that there's just so many great beats. It keeps going. and you're just glued to it. Like, I tell everybody this, I'm like, yeah, the first couple of minutes are a little dry because it's just a lot of science babble. Like, even my girlfriend, she kind of walked in when I was watching it, and she was just like, what is it? Like, she thought I was watching some kind of, like, business movie, like, the fucking, what's the one? The one with Steve Carell? No, oh, like those, like, God, no. No, it's like the Steve Carell one. Like,
oh, the Big Short,
something like that.
Big Short, yeah.
And I was like, no, sit down. It gets better. Mm-hmm. It's time travel. And she was like, okay, that would have been fucking weird, you watching that. And I was like, I know, I'm not going to watch this time travel. But, and then the best part is that it, like, it's one of those films that, like, sparks conversation about these ideas and, like, our hubris. And I absolutely love that. There was many times where me and my girl would be watching it, and we just, like, pause and just get in conversation and start talking about these ideas and, like, just scenes where they're, like, watching themselves, you know, go into the storage facility. It's just, I don't know. I think what I really liked the most about it is that the movie's confusing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. Anybody who's going to watch this, anyone listening, watching right now, when you watch this film, I guarantee you are not going to get it on the first try. Yeah. No one is. I watched it, I was like, what the? I saw this 10 years ago. And then when I watched it today again, I was still like, oh, what? Yeah. Like,
I was
like,
watching this, I'm like, am I dumb? What is that?
Yeah, no, don't, anyone out there, I promise you, you will not get it. And I think Shane Carruth did that on purpose, because you kind of, there's a point in time where, like, even Abe and Aaron's are kind of getting confused, and they're just kind of like, what the fuck is going on? Like, okay, I think this is what's going on. And then, oh, wait, how did this guy get into it? And I feel like I think how most films, a lot of people, when they watch it, they want to relate to the characters. And I think that's what makes it relatable for many viewers, is that even the characters themselves are like, oh shit, we're playing with something. At first, they sound hella smart. Like, you think, oh, they're science engineers, they're geniuses.
Yeah.
But then little by little, you go, oh no, they're fucking around. Like, they have absolutely no idea what the hell, how much power they hold. And their main objective is, like, let's make money. Let's, of course, like, everyone's first idea with, if they can time travel, is like, let me go win the lotto. Let me go.
Yeah.
You want to make money. That's your first fucking thing. And what I appreciated about it was that they weren't like, let's go visit the Old West, or let's go fucking to ancient Greece or some shit. They're like, no, money.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, like, that's everyone's first thought, is like, I want to go back in time, make money. And then hubris, they start fucking around with it too much, and they start realizing this is way too much power. And Aaron, I believe, starts getting, like, fucked up about it. And then Abe is like, you know, the nicer one, where he's like, we need to stop this. Like, we need to, we're done, you know. And he's trying to fix everything by the end of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do really like all of that, you know, what they're having this kind of divergent paths, and they're, like, debating on, like, what they should do with time travel and how they want to utilize it. And I love that the climax of this film is them just having a philosophical debate about what to do with this great power that they have. And like, oh, we're going to be at this party, and we've got to stop this thing. And one of them obviously wants to.
It's not just even stopping it, because it's always stopped.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, they're having a debate about, like, all the different things they could do and all the different routes they could take, and how every, you know, thing will change. And one of them kind of wants to be the hero and the guy. And he's like, oh, yeah, this is morally what we should do. And then Abe's like, I don't think we should do this. And the philosophical implications that come with doing something or not doing something, and how that will change this, and all the different permutations. And it's like they talk about playing it out so many times, and we don't really see much. And that is, you know, obviously a result of them not having a budget on this film. But I think that makes it so, like, okay, well, then this ending is so philosophical, and the script has to be so strong in that moment. And yeah, that I really, really liked this film's ending particularly. And then, when you see the way that these two characters go, and then kind of having that final fallout at the airport, and you're like, oh shit, is this it? I guess the movie's over. And, you know, then you see one of them just building the giant time travel machine at the end. It just leaves off like that, and you're like, fuck, okay, this is, It just makes you think. And yeah, just them having the debate to end the movie. That's the climax, is so perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like, it is a really cool mechanic of not showing the actual, like, stopping of, mm-hmm. of this, of Rachel's ex essentially threatening with the shotgun. The fact of the matter is that he's always stopped. Like, Aaron always stops him. But Aaron, being so hubris, wants it to look good. And so he goes back in time essentially twice, which creates three versions of himself in mm-hmm. the end. And
he can be the hero.
Yeah, so he could be the hero, but being the hero in the right way, because he's mm-hmm. always a hero, but he wants to make it look really good. And it's very much at a for a reason, like he's not going to be able to live that, the gain of that, because he can't live while, you know, at least the original Prime, you could say Aaron Zero, is there who ends up being in the attic for I would say a week, because of this takes over the course of like a week of all the mm-hmm. events. Linearly, and yeah, it is very much like, it's a very interesting thing to hear, and with the voiceover also of like that being kind of like the first diverging Aaron talking and discussing and leaving a voicemail to someone. It could be Aaron Prime, like explaining the situation, and or.
Well, because you do hear him listening to like some stuff on his headphones too, but yeah.
No, his headphones is playing back the conversation so that he plays it correctly.
Yeah. And so
he's hearing on his headphones the conversation of the first conversation of Abe coming to him and telling him about what he did, what he's like created.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. But that's not the voice.
Oh, okay. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that Aaron, and then I think that might be Aaron.
What I took Aaron. The voiceover was that he was leaving a voiceover for another version of himself.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's possible that I think it's the Aaron Prime who essentially doesn't know anything about what the hell happened, because he got put into the attic before Abe was even like had that conversation with him.
I need to watch this movie again.
Yeah, definitely.
Even now, yeah. On my second watch through, I'm still like, wait a minute.
So he left a voicemail for that, the Abe that essentially continued to live on his life. That's what it is. You don't really get to know what exactly like the second diverging Abe at the end at the airport does. And I think that the first diverging Abe, the one that leaves the voicemail and says like that essentially the second diverging Abe wanted it more, and he's already done everything that I've done, mm-hmm. so I just let him have it and I let him do his thing. But I think that first diverging Abe is the one that is building the big time machine, because he hasn't essentially experienced all the bad shit that the final diverging Aaron has done, so he doesn't know any better. So he's still on that track of like, I want to like expand on this and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. then Abe himself just diverges once, and he's the one that's trying to stop the time travel machine, but he doesn't know that the first diverging Aaron is out there. So yeah, so that's like a whole thing. So that's whole crazy, because he's just like, he can't stop it. And I think that that's what the second diverging Aaron was saying at the airport, is that it's going to happen anyway, knowing that the first diverging Aaron is still out there, kind of thing. So yeah, there you go.
it's like you really do need like look at like a fucking diagram after you watch this movie, because it is a lot. There's just so much. It's just like, and yeah, it is they do not slow down at all. They just kind of barrel through the plot, and you're like, what is this resolved? The guy they had like from the future, he's gone now. Okay, like, yeah. They just go and go.
that too is that so with that other that was it is Mr. Granger existing even that is like they haven't changed something in the future
and they don't know what it was and he somehow got into the box.
No, they haven't changed it yet. They haven't changed it yet. They haven't yet.
A version of them did.
A version to come has.
Yeah, like a version. Yeah. The way so I thought essentially, a lot of it
Aaron two, the I'm first diverging. Numbers, okay? The first diverging Aaron is going to do something probably with that big box because that's going to bring in the funding probably from Mr. Granger because it's big. Or
maybe like we don't know that though. Like they could have already. That guy could have like some version of them could have done that, and then he came back, and then when he came back, he changed his own future, and they saw that, and so they never brought him back in the past. It's a movie that fucks with you like that. Like it's like
but the first diverging Aaron didn't experience that seeing Mr. Granger.
Yeah. Okay. But okay. So
he'll make a mistake.
Yeah. He will. So or no, but yeah. That okay. I don't know. I'm trying to think how to explain this. Explain my thoughts on it. It's just like they're like, okay, at some point they go off and do something because we as the audience don't see it, right? But that doesn't mean that so like when we do see like all the changes that they make, but that was the change that one future version of themselves did, right? They for some reason brought Granger in, and that is not going to happen though anymore. That has been changed. Was that a ghost?
Was it
a future Alan? Okay, guys.
Fucking cat. I was listening. And
I thought that was like a future Alan coming back to murder you. Sorry, listeners. Oh, like right now, Alan just got like I saw a flicker of something behind Alan, and he got the shit scared out of him. And it was like the future Mr. Granger coming back behind him. But like, they could have changed something, right? Yeah. They could have brought Mr. Granger in, and then he comes back and he changes, and he by following them changes his own future, so they never bring him back.
Another theory that actually is because Rachel is his daughter, the one that with the ex-boyfriend. So it also could be possible that they f up, one of the like saving. You know, the day.
That's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
And Rachel gets killed, and they bring in Mr. Granger, like, we can fix this, like, save your daughter kind of thing as well. So, yeah.
And then he goes rogue and starts following them around. That's good. That's
well, I think he's like, he might have been following him around because he doesn't know what to do now, kind of thing. If they, like, sent him, or if he stumbled into it and then without knowing what exactly to do or how this thing's work, he's not being inconspicuous. Like, they're like, we have to be inconspicuous. We can't bump into ourselves and stuff like that.
Or he finds the fail-safe box through some means and then he figures out what it is through some means and then he goes back.
No, he definitely had to come through the fail-safe box. The fail-safe box is essentially always on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. One...
That's the only thing that could take you all the way back.
The stubble is because he's been in there so long.
Yeah.
Because that's the way I thought of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, like, it doesn't, and that's what I love too about it is it doesn't tell you an answer or even like it gives you like little tidbits, but it's like any of these things could be feasibly right, and it's just like you're just gonna have to think and like what do you think, you know, like it's not. Spelled out. It's not like there is one right answer, you know?
Yeah. Going back to Tenet, I think actually it's the same-ish kind of logic because you have to spend the same amount of time going backwards as
I was gonna say Tenet definitely feels like it takes something amount. From this. Interestingly enough, Shane Carruthers was brought on as a consultant on Looper for time travel stuff.
True. Looper is kind of like an interesting take on it because it is very much it kind of involves the chamber kind of situation, but it's more instantaneous and it's more like wormhole-y in a bit of its thing. It's kind of like a transporting kind of thing, but it is very. I can see similarities between Primer and Looper as well, so but not with the exact like consequences.
Yeah, Looper's a little more loose.
Looper's a lot more linear. Like, it's a lot more cause and effect. Because
like Back to the Future-y more.
Your hand is disappearing, Marty. You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's not a lot. Like, this is just, like, very hard. I wouldn't say boring, but, like, bordering on just very, just like you said, like, Alan, your girlfriend came in and she saw it and she was like, yeah, what are we watching here? Like, this is just seems like just people talking, and it seems on first glance like that, but it is just the drama of all is what's really compelling. It's not any of the, you know, oh, well, what if, you know, we go back to this time and creates a branch like that. Like, it's all just like very black and white, like pen and paper, like this happens. And it's
very small scale. It's like most time travel movies, it's like, oh, be careful because space time continuum or whatever the fuck, or it's just like, we're going to have to do this mission or whatever, like in Tenet. And this is just kind of more like, I think that's what I really like about it. It's very grounded and like, there's no big fucking, oh my God, like something's going to be destroyed or whatever. It's just like people figuring it out, very relatable characters being like, well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to fuck around with it. And I also like, too, that the consequences, like Ariel had brought up earlier with the writing, I thought of it more as, like, side effects.
Yeah.
Because I know right before they go in together, they go like, oh, what can happen? What if we get, like, cancer or, like, you know, our balls don't work anymore or something like that? And I'm just like, yeah, you never know. It's like Cronenberg's Fly. He fucking makes the device. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, he has that great line where it's just like, how do we know this is safe? It's like, I don't know any of this is safe, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, and I love that too, because it's just like, you're going to find out, you're going to, like, and like when he's bleeding out of his ear, my girlfriend goes, well, why doesn't he just go to the hospital? I was like, well, how do you go to the hospital and say, hey, I time traveled and my fucking ear's bleeding?
Yeah.
You can't really say that. And then if they're going to try and figure it out, they're going to be like, what are you doing? Like, What is it? How you just gave yourself cancer like a day ago? How the fuck did you do that?
And also probably like the 36-hour days are like wearing on them, and like how does a human body handle that? Because they're like doing like all this like weird stuff to themselves and just making themselves just these human guinea pigs. And I thought that all was really, and like the it'll just be the weird things that'll break your brain. Like when he's just like, I haven't eaten since later this afternoon.
That's my favorite line of the whole fucking movie. I just love it. It's like the perfect time travel-y joke too. Like, I'm very happy that was thrown in there, because the whole movie's very, you know, it's very, I don't even want to just say drama. Just
straightforward. Yeah.
Yeah, just straightforward. But like, it's one of those like kind of films where like, I guess that's what I like about some really small budget films, where they don't really have like they have a genre they're focusing on, but they're just focusing on that. And like, sometimes they come across as very like humorless almost, but it's not because the film, it's just maybe the director, everyone's learning. Like I felt like that with Brick. Brick is is a very, you know, small budget movie too. And it really focuses on its genre of that like kind of gumshoe, high school gumshoe type of detective story, but you know, everyone's kind of learning and everyone's just kind of like, all right, well, you know, there's a little bit of humor in it, but it's just very like, it feels like you could be there almost. Like, that's another thing I liked about Brick and Primer, is that just everything doesn't look glamorous. You know, they're at an airport, they're at a Hilton hotel. It's just very like, you're almost a fly on the wall. Like, it feels like you could be there, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I wanted to kind of touch on that a bit. Like I was saying before, like, this film having the budget that we have, and like you know, you said it's not $7 million, it's not $700,000, it's not even $70,000. This movie was made for $7,000, which is insane. That is ridiculous. Like, that is like even Clerks, by the way, for example, like, Kevin Smith paid for by taking credit card debt, going into credit card debt, was made for $27,000. So like, this film, that's why he had to do everything himself, is because he just had no money, and he had to shoot it on 16mm, not for any stylistic choices or any reasons like that, but just because can't afford 35mm film. And the fact that they were able to do this like so well is really a testament, because they were only really able to use one take, because that's where, you know, this film was not, this was before digital, the digital film was around, like Attack of the Clones had come out the year before, but it wasn't at a level that where you could do something like this. So he had to like basically just, film was very expensive. That's what I'm sure a majority of the cost of this movie was just probably mostly the film, then maybe a little bit of lighting. And then that's why he just did everything himself. He worked on it for years. And yeah, this is clearly a labor of love. And getting to see these kind of like weird little micro-budget films, you know, some other ones that I think of like El Mariachi or Following, Christopher Nolan's first film, that even like Paranormal Activity, which did get, you know, a little bit more of a budget before more people saw it, but this one did not. This one is truly like a film that just some guys made, and I think that's what's really cool, why you see a lot of those films with these razor-thin budgets made for a couple thousand dollars, you know, under $30,000. It happened in the early 90s to the mid-2000s was because cameras were becoming more available. You could, even for a few thousand dollars, theoretically make a movie, whereas there was literally no way you could do that before. You know, like Richard Linklater was one of the first guys to do that. A lot of people from Texas have made these really small films, like Linklater and these guys, and then Ariel's nemesis Robert Rodriguez did it. But like it's just like you couldn't do that before. You could not physically get a camera because they were so like only film studios had them. But it started to open up a little bit in the 90s, and even since then, now with digital being a thing, and now with digital looking as good as it does, you can get a digital camera and theoretically shoot a movie like this and not even have to worry about the one take, not even have to worry about spending thousands of dollars on film, which was the majority of this. So, you know, I think that is why you are starting to see, even now more than even then when it started to open up, now it's really opening up. And I think the next wave of filmmakers we're going to get are going to be people who are, because you can shoot a fucking movie on your phone and it will look movie quality. You might need some like lenses and attachments and stuff, but that is pennies to the dollar on even getting film stock. So it was really a revolution that we went through in this time period, and this film is an absolute testament to that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, and it like going back to like this, the writing and stuff like that, it is very much ingenious of like, yeah, using what it was able to do, and like very much so like how Alan was saying, like the beginning felt very like slow, but it's just the payoff of at the end. Like I think the end of this movie just makes this whole movie, like just that twist, to quote our third Rian Johnson movie of the episode, very much like a twist that I kind of felt with like Knives Out and stuff. but yeah, I mean, it's because it's just like, Oh my gosh, like this, everything's like falling apart, and it's like you were duped alongside like Abe, you know, into thinking that it's still surprising to me, and I'm still just taken aback and impressed that we essentially never thought, like it just is mind-boggling that we never saw the original, you know, the original conversation between them. We probably only spent maybe actually 15 minutes with the Aaron that didn't know what was going on, and this Aaron, you know, had it already implanted himself in the story without us knowing. And it's just so mind-boggling to think about that, of like just from the beginning for us as an audience, this was already going on, and the end was already at the beginning in a way. The last Aaron we see on screen was the first Aaron we saw at the start of this time traveling journey, you know, kind of thing. So it's just very interesting.
You know what though? That's my favorite part though of like time travel stories, because it should happen before you know it, because it's time travel. You know, most, you know, films in general are very linear and they're straightforward. Like it goes act one, act two, act three, whatever. And yeah, sometimes there's a twist along the way where you find out, oh, this character did this before anybody else knew, but it's only because for the twist or whatever. Time travel, typically, that's the fun part, is that you can just write shit whenever you want, because those rules, I mean, you have to still follow the rules of that world you created, but it's so much fun, and that's one of my favorite parts about, like, time travel stuff in general. Just like, I'm sorry, Derek, I'm gonna bring it up, but that one of my favorite seasons of Doctor Who, the first season with the 11th Doctor, Matt Smith, the season finale, they reveal all of these things were happening throughout the season, even in the first episode, and like and you kind of don't pay attention, you don't really think about it, but it all gets unraveled, and it all gets told at the very end, and you're like, oh my god, that's right, that's what was, oh shit, that's cool, whatever. Like, that's one of my favorite things, when like where just something happened off screen, and you know what, I love the mystery too. I love that, like, we don't know which errands or what Mr. Wrangler or whatever did something in the future, because again, it's time travel. Shit just will not happen linear, and you maybe just not know. Maybe something will just become another timeline, or it'll be erased, or it just doesn't affect this timeline, whatever. You know, I'm going Avengers and Back to the Future, Dragon Ball timelines and stuff, but that's just the beauty of it. Like, that's what I love, that time travel stories can give you these things. Yeah. It's almost, I don't want to say 100%, but almost unique to it. And it's so much fun. And it's so much, because it makes you want to go back and watch it again. And then you're like, there it is. That's when they did it. Or that's when that happened. Mm-hmm. It just gives it the replay value so much more. Like, I love films that you can go back and rewatch over and over and over again and keep finding new things all the time. And I feel like time travel is just one of those fucking amazing genres that you can do it with.
Yeah, the device, it's just a literary device, but it allows you to tell so many interesting stories and do so much cool stuff with the story, and have characters interact with themselves or like past events, and make all these complicated moral decisions and see how they've grown and changed or how they don't. So yeah, I love good time travel shit. Like I said at the beginning, like, I honestly could do a whole podcast where every week we do another time travel movie. Like, this is my favorite shit.
Enjoyed that they didn't, like, because it's kind of like alluded that this causes branching timelines, but you never see those branching timelines. You stay in the point of view of these two guys that, like, essentially, so you stay in the point of view of, like, what essentially ends up being the second diverging Aaron and the first diverging Abe. You don't see, like, what potentially they did create branching. It's all they like don't have to spend much time on that, because it just boils down to characters.
Mm-hmm.
And characters like that, they leave, you know, the science up to interpretation even at that level as well. You know, like, they don't go deep into it. It's just, this is the world and the timeline that we are seeing right now, and, like, that's what's the most important. Even in that level, like, this is a sci-fi movie in all in all essence of the word, but they don't expand on the world, you know? They just keep it very localized, you know, in a way.
Yeah, and that's part of that is because, you know, like, it's like the thing with the shark from Jaws, or the Hoth scene in Star Wars. It's like, because of the limitations that were placed on them by the budget, they were not able to do this, and that made it so much more interesting. Like, the shark in Jaws is so much more interesting because you don't see it. It's scarier. And just like that, the time travel and all the implications of that are going on in the larger world are so much more interesting and mind-boggling when they aren't fully explained to you, when you're just like, wait, where did this future guy come from? Like, you know, when you're just like, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, small budgets, I think that's why I'm a big fan of small budgets, is you have to get creative. You have to. You don't have all that backup, so you have to be like, okay, you know, we got to sit down and think a little bit, figure it out. And, like, look how many iconic small budget films there are. You know, Evil Dead, Jaws, Clerks, etc. There's so many, and there's so many iconic things of them. You know, Clerks, he had to close the blinds because he had a film at night, because he was working that convenience store in real life, in the day. So he's like, all right, I'm going to direct the movie at night. He closes the blinds, and that's why you see the, I assure you, we're open. And they're like, well, how do we write that in the film? Some stupid-ass kids put gum in the locks. Perfect. There you go. Solved an issue. And now it's iconic. Now people will have big old sheets and write with fucking the shoe shiner stuff. I assure you we're open, and they'll have it in their house or outside or whatever. And it's already, it's an iconic little thing. So yeah.
So, you know, speaking of all this time travel stuff and how time travel movies do all these things so well, do you guys have any particular favorite time travel movies you want to mention?
You got one?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much, I'm a basic bitch about it. I mean, Primer, I feel like it is like the advanced time travel movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're going to get into it. And what started it all for me was the Back to the Future trilogy. So mm-hmm. For me, that's a perfect trilogy. And that's what got me into it, into the genre. So,
yeah, I mean, they're fucking iconic for a reason. Like, all three of, like, we've covered one of them, you know, mm-hmm. like, they're all great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, just, there's so many, like, nowadays, like you said, like, I was just looking up, there's a top 100, you know, kind of thing. Like, even, like, things like, I think maybe my first, trying to think of what I remember my earliest childhood of, like, time travel movies. Like, was there any, like, animated time travel movies I'm trying to think of? But even there's so many trippy ones. That, I mean, it's a genre that opens itself up to being such a trippy topic if it wants to be. The Butterfly Effect always, like, freaked me out, and that time travel is so freaking crazy.
That is a weird movie.
And, like, speaking of branching timelines, it's just, like, it is out there. I consider it underrated, because I don't know if it still holds up, but when I watched it, it was, like, a trip.
Did you ever see the alternate endings?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I like the original one.
Yeah, dude, that one. Oh, my God. That fucked me up. Yeah, like,
they chose the right one.
What was
the original ending? Or what was the correct?
He essentially says, like, it, spoilers. He essentially doesn't become her friend, you know, at the end.
Okay, yeah.
Because I, for some reason, saw the alternate ending in the movie, like mm-hmm. I had the DVD and I saw the one where he choked himself, and I was like, "What the fuck was that?"
Yeah.
So I thought that was the real ending at first.
One I just watched the other day was Edge of Tomorrow. I really like.
I need to see that. I need to see that.
Oh yeah. All you need is kill. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's one I'm trying to. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
But yeah, like it's just like I really love like how time travel has been used for just multiple different genres as well, like mm-hmm. love stories. Like a recent history favorite kind of one is like About Time is really cute and a really like interesting version of time travel. It's a little bit more causality in its way,
and it features really Mr. Brightside in it, so you know I gotta love it.
It's just like there's just so many, like, even things like you don't really think about is like, oh yeah, that's time travel. Oh, another weird one is Source Code. It's too, that one's like just weird out there.
That was not my favorite movie. I get people liked it, but Source Code didn't do it for me. But
it's just weird. It's weird.
It's very strange.
Like, yeah.
I wanted to bring up two real fast.
Yeah. Hot Top Time Machine. Is that your favorite album?
Oh, God, no. Fuck, no. Those guys, no. That's one time travel movie I will skip immediately. I skipped immediately. Has Homegirl from the CW shows. It's a Danielle
Panabaker? Panabaker?
Yeah, it's called Time Lapse. And the premise of it, it's like a lower, but it's not like as low as Primer. But it's more of like early 2010s. Essentially, these roommates all find this machine that can take a photo of the future and it'll print out a photo. And it's like whatever it's pointed at, it'll tell you it'll take a photo of what happens a day ahead of time. So they kind of figure out, oh, what's going on? It's kind of like, oh, kind of horror-y, but not really. And then there's this other one that I kind of want to cover. I've been thinking about it as well, called Plus One. I wouldn't call it time travel, but it's like similar. Essentially, the plot, if it's another small budget one too, essentially the plot is it's like a big party's going on and like a comet passes by and everyone in the party gets like copied, like they get doppelgangers, and the doppelgangers are doing everything they are that they're doing 30 minutes prior. So let's say someone goes to the bathroom at 8 o'clock. At 8:30, their doppelganger will go to the bathroom, and like they start kind of like finding each other's doppelgangers, and then like it's kind of this whole doppelganger timey wimey kind of movie. And I've been thinking about it a lot lately. So,
Do you guys like the idea of like short term time travel and like repeating kind of time travel, like essentially live, die, repeat, Edge of Tomorrow? You know, no,
like time loop type,
time loop kind of things. Like Happy Death Day is another recent one.
I mean, Groundhog Day is the OG of that, which is I love Groundhog Day. You know, like that's a movie I that's like my mom's favorite movie, and so I was like raised on that movie, and I love it. You know, and I think that is a really cool device.
I think it's very I think there's I enjoy those, and I get like more like in. And I don't want to say invested, but I mean, it just gets you more like on edge kind of thing. I think it's a device that like allows you to be more on edge, like alongside with Primer, because it is very much just like a course of like even the like a few jumps is a few days or you know, just a few hours. It's just because very much there's a lot less time to make mistakes. And because of that, it makes every little instance a little bit more like impactful in a way, I would say, I think. But
yeah.
So Alan, do you enjoy any particular like version of time travel? Do you like long standing time travel or short term time travel or long term time travel?
I'm a fan of like all of them, honestly, as long as it can be creative and fun and like suspenseful, like you said, or like kind of gets you like, I have a great time with it, as long as it's like I said, just unique and fun. I mean, still the climax of Back to the Future still gets me on edge every time, even though I know what's going to happen. If it's like that, fuck yeah, I'm all up for it.
I guess the question is like, would you want short term time travel or long term time travel? Would you like to go back a day, or would you like to go back, have the ability to go back a day?
Oh, if I
have
could,
the ability to go back years, you know?
Oh, man. I would, because you think like years, so you're like, oh, I can make all these changes, but then you go back and make these changes. You're like, are you even the same person and stuff like that? You know?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Damn, I don't know. I guess it depends if it's like a world shattering thing, and you know, like Avengers Endgame, you got to go back in time. Yeah, but if it's kind of like Primer and you're kind of fucking around, and or like time lapse that I brought earlier, that one was really cool because it's just it's very spooky in the way that like you see what's going to happen in the future, and you're trying to figure out the puzzle of what's happening with only that one clue. I don't know, that's actually a really good question. That's really hard to figure, I don't know. And then time loop stuff is always trippy as fuck.
I'm gonna give kind of a bullshit answer to that and just say that like I spent the last couple of years just trying to figure out like, you know, just work on like being like learning like to leave the past in the past and to like accept mistakes and to like realize that that's helped me grow as a person. And I do think that is something that is inherent to time travel movies, is that with something like About Time or something, like that's one of the core messages running through that is, if you try to change everything and change all your mistakes and change all these things, you're gonna, and something I think is also true about this movie is that it's gonna end up fucking you over.
Yeah, very true. Because I mean, I think all of us, I think without question, almost every single human being on this planet has probably thought of like, I wish I can go back and change that.
Yeah.
So, but like you said, Derek, I guess there is that, like, you know, you gotta kind of, I've been going through it myself as well. I mean, not to get like personal. But yeah, I get it. There's times where you're just like, I need to leave the past where it is and just be it. But you can't say that it wouldn't be funny to go back in time and just kind of follow yourself around and watch you do stuff. And just kind of, I don't know. I feel like I'd be really weird about it. I love the shots like in this one and Primer and Back to the Future where like they see themselves like running around and they're doing stuff. I don't know why it feels so like weird and creepy. I don't know.
You know, what's a really good short term like time travel thing. And it's cool because it's unlike movies. It's interactive and it's Majora's Mask. That shit being on the 3-day loop. And you can see how like you changing one thing will affect something. And like it's like, oh, like there's this one thing. It's like, oh, like you have to stop this old lady from getting robbed. You know exactly when and where it's going to happen. But if you do that, that means you can't. There's this couple that has been separated and you can't get them back together. And it's just like the crazy implications that come from that game and just seeing like how it, like you knowing like you have this notebook, it's like these things happened at this time. That game is a masterpiece. That is like my favorite video game of all time. I just gotta throw that out there. I fucking love Majora's Mask.
One of the most stressful games of all time too.
Oh yeah
holy shit. Yeah. I still haven't beaten it. I've had it for so long. I even bought it in like my 3DS, and every time I boot that shit on, it's just stress. Like, no horror game can encapsulate how fucking stressful that game is. Like, Jesus.
Just looking up the goddamn moon all the time. And the moon just gets closer and closer, and it's got that fucking face. Oh my god, masterpiece. It's
terrifying, yeah.
God, it's such a good game. But I just wanted to also throw out a couple of my favorite time travel movies. You guys mentioned some really good ones. Obviously, the Back to the Future trilogy is untouchable. There's some other classics of the genre, like Terminator 2 or Bill and Ted, that I think absolutely really need to be mentioned. I think Days of Future Past is another one that is very, very fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I like that. I would time travel if it was that mechanic, that and then actually butterfly effect of like going into your own self-conscious kind of thing.
Yeah, that's always cool.
Because there's no like thing of like, oh, you bumping into yourself or your younger self and stuff like that. No, consciousness. If consciousness could, I'm like, oh yeah.
You're not going to run into yourself like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Time Cop and become a blob or whatever the fuck happened to that movie.
Because you don't have to go through the aspect of like explaining to yourself in the past, like, hey, this is what's going on. It's like, no, I got everything. Okay, I'm going to just act on my own accord kind of thing. So, yeah.
But there's a couple, you know, underrated ones that maybe we'll do at some point that I wanted to mention. Maybe one's not so underrated, but I mentioned on anybody who's a patron knows that I had on my top 10 of 2022 list Petite Maman, which is this really, it's another 70-something minute film, French film from Céline Sciamma. So her follow-up to A Portrait of a Lady on Fire, just kind of this very, once again, low-key time travel movie about a little girl meeting her mom when they're both 8 years old. I also want to shout out, there's this really weird one from the Czech Republic from like the 50s called Journey to the Beginning of Time. It's on like Tubi and stuff. And I think you could find it on YouTube too. So if you want to watch something like kind of weird, it's also really short. And it's just like really early weird 50s Czech kind of like scientifically based sci-fi. Because it's just like them going through a history of life on Earth. It's fun. It's weird and fun. But then I think, honestly, just one of the ones that is just so fun that I love going back to is Star Trek IV, the one with the whales, where they fucking, they're like, oh my god, we gotta go, like, there's this fucking thing shows up in space and it's making these sounds, they figure out it's the sound of a humpback whale, and they're like, oh shit, we've gotta go back in time when there were still humpback whales, because there's none here in this future where we're in Star Trek. Alright, let's go back to 1986, the year the movie was made. And so that they could just, like, make a Star Trek movie. It's so wacky and fun, and there's no villains, but it's just, like, the whole time travel thing is they just need to get whales and bring them to the future. It's got Spock on a bus, like, clamping a fucking, like, punk rock guy. It is absolutely one of the most, it might be my favorite Star Trek movie, which is saying, like, there's some other great Star Trek time travel stuff. There's some time travel stuff in 09, and there's obviously First Contact, but you can't beat the one with the whales. The one with the whales is, like, goat time travel for me.
Mm-hmm.
What about, what are you guys' favorite time travelers?
Ooh, like, specifically people?
Yeah, like Marty McFly. Or the Doctor.
I mean, the cast of Lost season 5, maybe, like, you know, like that the Jin when he goes back and all those guys, they go back and they join the Dharma Initiative, and Juliet and Faraday, all those guys are pretty cool. But I mean, yeah, Marty is great. No, you know, I think it's Link is a, like, not only in Majora's Mask He's also a time traveler. He's in Ocarina of Time. You know, he jumps back and forth to 7 years all the time. So actually, interesting enough, I had a couple years back for my 30th birthday, I had a time travel party where I made everybody dress up as a time traveler.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the time traveler. I like the main guy in About Time. I think he's really cool.
Dom Gleason. He's so good.
No, not Dom Gleason. It's Dom Hill?
Dom Gleason.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the dad?
No, Brendan Gleason's the dad.
Brendan Gleason, that's there we go. Oh yeah, Dom Hill. But like Marty classic, of course. Yeah, love him, the doctor. Who else? Who we got in animation? Alan, who we got in animation? Like I'm just thinking of Peabody, Mr. Peabody.
Animation.
Mr. Wizard, like that's an old school. My dad always used to say Mr. Wizard. I think it was time traveling people. That's some old TV show that I've never seen. But
no, I'm trying to think.
Animation. I mean, I know the one I was gonna say was Trunks.
Trunks. Not Barry Allen.
Future Trunks. I don't even DBZ, but I love Trunks.
Future Trunks is the shit. Mm-hmm. You know, he's actually one of the Saiyans in that show that actually gets shit done. Dude is
and he's got a sword.
And he has a sword. And he has probably one of the hardest, sickest fucking intros to a character in all of media. I wouldn't say he's like... No, I would say he's like a top three fucking most badass introductions to a character. You don't know who he is. He just shows up. He fucking gets shit done. And everybody's like, who the fuck are you? And he's like, I'm from the future. And I'm like, even better. A fucking time traveling badass. Like Trunks, and Goku Black, I guess. Are some of my animated ones.
Yeah, not Barry Allen, but Bart Allen. Not Barry Allen, but Bart Allen. Bart Allen is the superior time traveler. But yeah.
He doesn't
mess things up. He's Impulse, yeah.
Oh yeah.
And he doesn't mess things up. He's just trying to save his world, make his future better, not try to sad boy save his mom. So yeah.
How about his mom? How about you, Alan, though?
<I'm> so sorry. Fuck his mom. Let her fucking die.
Hey, she's a fixed point. She shouldn't. Yeah. She has to die. There's too much things.
It just sounds so funny.
Yeah. Impulse is just
trying to save his fucking mom from the world, the DC's biggest hater, the Reverse Flash.
Yeah. Impulse is just trying to save, not even Jay Garrick, his thing. He's just trying to save the world in general, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah.
What were you going to say, Derek?
I was going to say, Alan, what are your favorite time travelers?
Future Trunks, for sure. Mm-hmm. The Dr. Marty. I feel like there's one I'm missing. And it's fucking bothering the shit. I can't even think of it. Like, I want to say it's animated, but those are the first three that come to mind, for sure. But there's one. It'll come one day.
How about, I know there's some animated time travel. It's We're Back. He goes back in time.
Oh my god!
Scientist goes back in time and snatches the dinosaurs. There you go.
Yeah, dude, I fucking watched the shit out of that movie as a kid.
That's a great fucking movie. Oh my god, I love We're Back.
The circus scene where like he makes him like evil gave me nightmares for fucking ever. Like I would rewatch that movie, but I would hide behind a couch when that scene would come up because I'm like, oh nope, the dinosaurs are all scary, and like that was like dinosaur. Oh my god, what is it called? Dinosaur Mania at that time, because Jurassic Park just came out.
Right.
So it was just like, oh. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And the scene where he gets eaten by the crows, that shit still sticks with me.
Mm-hmm. I actually want to go back and rewatch that.
Right?
That
it's a fucking great movie.
That movie was the shit. Oh my god, dude, that's like bugging the shit out of me. Like, looking at my books, I'm like, is there something I'm missing? But.
Yeah, man, I can't think of anything.
I think we got a good list. I think we got a solid list, you know?
I can be hella cheap and be like Batman, the Return of Bruce Wayne series. I can be
Or that scene in Batman v Superman, where he goes to the future or whatever.
The weird...
You have to save her!
The Flash doing that, yeah.
And you're just like, what?
Yeah, no, I'm just specifying because, like, he got the Omega Sanction, and he has to, like, live all these lives, and he's kind of time-traveling in a way, but not really. It's weird. It's Grant Morrison. It's weird. But, yeah.
All right, yeah. Well, I mean, I think we might have... this podcast might be longer than the actual movie. That might be the first time we've done it.
But it's just time travel, man. It's so much fun. Yeah. It's so much fun to talk about.
Yeah. I know. Any final thoughts, guys?
All I would recommend is if you do go out and watch this, please watch it. Have a great time with it. Be ready to... I hope you guys can watch it with other people so you guys can discuss. It's a fun discussion film. And just be ready to immediately go on YouTube or Google and be like, primer explained. I think as soon as you hit the space bar after typing primer, you're going to see explain, chart, this. Yeah, so but be ready for that.
Go on the Wikipedia page. They got a nice little graphic there that tells you, like, okay, they go back in the box. And they go,
I'll throw out the one that I watched, like, right after this one that I stumbled on, but it was actually very, very, like, helpful. It was this YouTuber called London City Girl. It's just called Primer 2004 Illustrated Explanation. So, and she has nice, simple illustrations and really awesome, like, graphic. Very simple, very easy to follow, and I think, like, it helped me a lot. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. I was going to say, you know, if you can go into this movie blind, which, you know, but you just heard us talk about it, but go back to a time before you heard us talk about this movie and just watch it like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do want to bring up one last thing.
Oh, yeah. What you got?
It was so, like, I like the Paranormal Activity movies, and the first two are really good. I like them. And then but that's just me. Again, Paranormal Activity 1 was a little... But I just said, like, the little paranormal movie that could kind of think 2009. Anyways, later down the line, they make sequels, and they make the as we all dub it as the Mexican one. I think it was like the Chosen Ones. I can't fucking remember. It was cool because I was like,
oh, hey! I know what you're talking about.
Because it was cool because, like, you know, it's like I was like, I could relate to that even more because, like, they have, like, you know, it happens like in a Mexican neighborhood, and, like, they're all kind of mentioning stuff that, like, we're used to, but about ghost stuff. But there's one particular part where that's where, like, this for me, the franchise jumped the shark many times after the first two, but there's time travel.
What?
There's time travel in that one, and it's a cool scene where, you know, it goes back to the first movie, but it's the weirdest fucking example of going, we're out of ideas, let's use time travel for a fucking ghost movie. And I'm like, what the fuck? And it goes back to, like, the big climax of the first one, and it's kind of cool, but you're just like, who the fuck has had a haunted house and they go, yeah, doors are squeaking and windows are closing. Oh, by the way, I fucking time traveled. Like, my ghost made me time travel. Like, how haunted can you be that you time travel? It's fucking wild. And to this day, to me, I think it's one of the strangest uses of time travel. It's fucking bonkers. But I'm so glad I was able to bring it up real fast.
I was gonna say something about, like, a spooky thing where the end is time travel, but I don't want to spoil what it is. But I think you know what I'm talking about, Alan. Where, like, the climax is like, I'll tell you off mic because I don't want to spoil for people. But yeah,
for sure. I'd be sorry I spoiled the fucking 5th, 6th Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, right. Nobody's gonna fucking give a shit about
it. Just go watch the first two, and you're fine. Those are the best ones.
Yeah,
but yeah.
All right, guys. Well, you know, that was super fun. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our discussion on Primer. I've had a blast. But yeah, we have been the Undercast Company. We do a couple other podcast things. Ariel, you do your show. You Never See Another. If you wanted to give the people a little info on that.
Yeah, it's a podcast that comes out the first of every month. We discuss films that are underrated. It's giving the spiel of this own one. No, we discuss films that are considered a part of pop culture, cinematic history, but either myself or my guests have never seen them, so we discuss the movie after they or I's first viewing of it.
And then I also do my podcast on the MCU, Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones, where I talk about the latest Marvel release whenever a new Marvel thing comes out. So that's really fun. We're also starting a new short little review type thing. So I started messing around with TikTok and trying to do some more stuff over there. So we're all probably going to be doing them, but just like little short 3 minute, under 3 minute reviews on recent films. So I did the first one on Plane. And so just look under Cast Company up on TikTok and Instagram and all that stuff to see some of that, because we're all going to be talking about that. Then I also do my podcast with my friend Damien, Can I Say Something? It's kind of a more like movie news and just kind of what have we been watching type show. And then just want to quickly shout out to a couple I've been guesting on some podcasts. This is going to be a little dated by the time this episode comes out, but I wanted to shout out the podcast Films and Stuff, which had me on to discuss Avatar Way of Water. That was a lot of fun hanging out with those guys, Ethan and Pete. And then also I wanted to shout out The Joystick Show. They had me on, interviewed me about a bunch of stuff, about films and about writing, and that was a blast. So definitely shout out to those guys. Check them out. But thank you all again for listening, and we will see you all next time, or in the future, or in the past, or some version of us will.
Thanks for being amazing, everyone.
Take it easy, everybody, and I'll see you guys yesterday.
Sense is something you can't even make sense of until you've been to the future and spent time there. So shut your hole and stand silent while we bring the world to a standstill with fresh new music and new beats that you can't even imagine yet.
Word!